Welcome to the Adoption and Foster Care Journey, a podcast to encourage, educate, and equip you to care for children and youth through adoption, foster, and kinship care. Hosted by an adoptive mom with over 22 years of kinship and adoptive parenting experience, she's on this journey with you. Please welcome Sandra Flack.
In you, Lord, my God, I put my trust. Well, that is very short verse, but powerful. Psalm 25, verse 1. And I am Sandra Flack. Welcome to this episode of the Adoption and Foster Care Journey. Thank you for joining me today. It's my prayer that you will be encouraged through listening to this episode, to all of our episodes. And today I'm excited about our guest. We have a fellow adoptive mama today. She and I have been Facebook friends for a while, and I actually got to meet her in person when I was in North Carolina for the Renew Foster and Adoptive Parent Retreat. She was leading a workshop on, get this, unlocking the teen brain. I can't wait for you to meet her, but first, check out this resource we have for you.
Sandra Flack, host of the Adoption and Foster Care Journey podcast and FASD educator Debbie Raymond, invite you to join Hope for the FASD Journey, a virtual support community for parents and caregivers raising individuals with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, diagnosed or not. This faith-based support community meets online 3 times each month, features special VIP guests, and a private Facebook group for members only, which includes Soul Care Saturday video devotionals led by Sandra and Deb. Both Sandra and Deb are adoptive moms raising kids with FASD and facilitators of the FACETS neurobehavioral model. For details and to register, visit justicefororphansny.org/hope-community. That's justicefororphansny.org/hope-community.
So while this podcast is not specifically about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders, I do talk about it quite a bit because a majority of children and youth in adoptive and foster placements have been prenatally exposed. Most of them are not diagnosed at all, or they're misdiagnosed with a whole alphabet soup of other diagnoses. It's way more prevalent than most people realize. In fact, 1 in 20 school-aged children in the United States, and that's not just kids in the child welfare system, but 1 in 20 school-aged children across the board have been prenatally exposed. Those rates are higher than even autism. And as a mom of 2 young men, now 18 and 20, who both have fetal alcohol syndrome, I know how difficult and isolating this parenting journey can be, and frustrating, I might add, as we have to fight and advocate for diagnoses and services and supports and all kinds of things. It can just feel like we are fighting this battle alone, but we're not alone, right? We've got a whole support community for you, like you just heard about in the commercial there, and training. I offer one-on-one FASD parent coaching sessions online for parents and caregivers, and also workshops online and in-person trainings. And coming up right around the corner here in June, I've got Thursday, June 6th at noon Eastern time, I'm offering a free lunch and learn. It's an introduction to FASD. It's just a 1 hour kind of quickie that hits all the high points and offers some tools as well. Perfect for any parent or caregiver who's just wanting to learn a little bit more. Maybe you hadn't heard about this too much, or you just really want to know, or maybe you know, but you also want other people in your kiddos' lives to know and understand it. Like the you know, grandparents or next door neighbor or school teacher or youth group leader or, you know, Sunday school teacher, whoever, right? Whoever's in your kiddos' lives who really need to have a better understanding of how their brain works and why it works differently. The intro to FASD, the Lunch and Learn, is a perfect way to get them that training. It's free. So I hope that you will check that out, as well as if you want something a little bit more, I have a 3-hour workshop coming up online on Thursday, June 13th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. You know, the intro is not a prerequisite. You could do either one of these workshops. You could do both of them. There is a small fee for the 3-hour, but the Lunch and Learn is free. But to register for any of these workshops or to learn more about them or, you know, find out or sign up for the coaching or the support group, you would go to our website, justicefororphansny.org, click on the training tab at the top of the homepage, and you'll see the drop-down box will say FASD. Click there, and then it'll take you to all of our FASD resources, and you can scroll through until you find what you are looking for there. So also, before we get started, a big ask is to subscribe or follow this podcast on your favorite podcast platform, especially if you're a regular listener. You know, we love it when you subscribe. Also, leave a review if you're listening on an Apple device. We are also now on YouTube, so you can, if you'd like to watch podcasts, you could watch us on YouTube. Justice for Orphans has a YouTube channel. But wherever you listen or watch, if you would be so kind as to leave that review, subscribe, follow, whatever, you know, whatever the button is that you have to click, because when you do, not only will you always have access to this podcast, but other adoptive and foster parents who are searching for a resource, searching for a podcast about adoption or about foster care, it will help them find us much easier, because we want everyone to have access and be encouraged and equipped as well. So thank you in advance for doing that. Now to our guest, Dr. Melody Aguayo is a wife, mom of 2 adopted children, and a parent consultant for overwhelmed parents. Does that sound familiar? Overwhelmed parents who are looking for support and solutions to navigate their parenting journey. She has a master's in marriage and family therapy and a PhD in psychology. Melody is also professionally trained in TBRI, trust-based relational intervention, but it's her own journey as a parent that has been her greatest teacher. So I can't wait to get to know her. I can't wait for you to get to know her and hear all about what the amazing work she's doing to support families. So please welcome Melody Aguayo. Hey, Melody.
Hi.
I am so excited to have you on this podcast. We've been, you know, on friends on social media, I think, for a while, and then got to meet in person briefly in North Carolina recently, but I feel like I'm going to get to know you a little bit more at the same time as our listeners. So thank you for taking the time to be with us today.
You're welcome. I'm so happy to be on here.
Yeah, me too. So I love the fact that you are also an adoptive parent. I'm an adoptive parent. Most of our listeners are adoptive or foster parents, and we all love to hear a good, you know, adoption origin story. So would you share with us, like, let's start there. What led you and your husband to pursue adoption?
So I always knew that I was going to adopt personally. And so that's a conversation that we had even before we got married. Just I know this is how God wants me to build my family. Is that something that you're interested in or not? So, and he was, so we were able to move forward from there, but yeah, I'm thankful for the clarity that God gave me from the beginning, because I've never lost that. I've never wondered if I was supposed to have done this despite all the trauma that we endured during our journey.
Wow. And now, did you do biological children too, or?
We didn't. We just, once we adopted our 2, and we started with adoption, we we understood that we were outmatched pretty early on and made the decision pretty early on. This is, I don't even know if we can handle this, but this is it.
Yeah. This is it. Yeah.
All we can do.
Yeah.
All we can do. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And then whatever you're comfortable sharing about that story, did you adopt through foster care internationally? Yeah. What did that look like?
So we adopted internationally from Ethiopia and we did a private adoption. So I hopped on an airplane with my dossier and just went to Ethiopia. And so we brought home our kiddos. I was in Ethiopia for months and our son was 15 months old and our daughter was 4 months old when we brought him home. And we really thought that that healing would just start automatically. You know, you get in the safe space where people who have longed for you and prayed for you and loved you, and you're just going to start to blossom. We just imagined that. And instead, what happened for our son was that his distress just continued and our distress began. And so it was for our daughter was she got planted in that home and she just blossomed in our home. Thank goodness. Thank goodness. The Lord knew what we could handle and he was enough. But for him, I think he's almost like it's almost like different kinds of plants. And he's like the surviving plant on the edge of a canyon that somehow found ways to put his little roots in those 6 grains of soil and make it. So he's, you know, he's just always struggled. And from the beginning, we knew he was going to struggle. It just, everything felt so complicated and so exhausting. And we felt so alone in our journey.
Yeah. Wow. So they came home at the same time. You brought home 2 at the same time. It's almost like bringing home twins, right? Because they were little and
yes.
And wow. And what did you know about, you know, were you told trauma? Were you told anything
at all? Not much, but not much. We had some information. We actually imagined with the information we had that our daughter seemed to have lots of medical special needs early on. But that was not, it might've been complex if that's the only thing we were dealing with, but that felt very small compared to the mental, emotional, behavioral special needs that our son had. So from the beginning, he was just a very distressed baby and did not want us, did not want to be soothed by us, was always trying to get away from us. And there was some early psychosis and some, you know, lots of different mental health issues that came up during the years, but really the attachment disorganization was just the hardest part of it because it was very hard to learn how to meet his needs.
Wow. So obviously trauma, loss, and just things that you don't even know, but just that attachment, all of those big behaviors you were probably, he was exhibiting, you guys were experiencing right from the get-go, it sounds like.
Yeah. And pretty much anything, almost anything, I'd exclude a couple of things from the list, but pretty much all the big behaviors that we are alarmed by when it comes to attachment issues, we experience just in heavy, heavy doses. And so, you know, it was just hard. We had, you know, years where he was pooping everywhere and peeing everywhere. And, you know, it was just like the hard stuff we were dealing with. Years of sleepless nights, years of stealing and destroying things and hoarding and just really big stuff. Daily phone calls from schools. I actually changed my ringtone to the Jaws ringtone when the school would call. It felt appropriate. It matched my nervous system response to the school calling. Yeah. It was just constant. I felt like my full-time job was just mediating, remediating, and trying to negotiate his behaviors just constantly. That was just a constant. And then trying on top of that, really wanting to connect with him.
Mm-hmm.
because that was important to me. I knew he was a brokenhearted baby. I was so overwhelmed by his behaviors that it was really hard to find that common ground.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember some of that with our oldest that came to us through a kinship placement, actually. And we had no, because of the way she came, she hadn't been in foster care. The way she came to us, we had no training in trauma or understanding anything, just that we already had three kids. We knew what we were doing, or we thought we knew what we were doing. And of course that she can come and live with us and we'll all live happily ever after. And her behaviors were nowhere near as big as what you're describing. But I remember still there was enough behaviors to where I was drained and I found myself praying daily, you know, Lord, help me to love this child like you love her. Help me to see her as you do. Because a lot of days I didn't feel like I liked her. And then, you know, the guilt of, you know, how could I feel that way about this little kid, you know, and she had lost her birth mom, you know, and her mom died of cancer, actually. And so we understood a little bit to know, you know, that, but it took years for us to actually uncover not only and learn some trauma that she had experienced before ever coming to us that we didn't know, but even understanding the impact of trauma, and which we didn't even go on the lookout or the search for learning about that until we had already adopted four other kids internationally. And the youngest one had all those lovely behaviors. So as we began to learn everything we could to help support him better, that's when I started to realize, oh my goodness, this little girl, you know, so many years ago, that's what she, you know, she had experienced all these things, and she was a, you know, not to say a trauma kid is probably not a nice way to phrase it, but she'd experienced trauma. We didn't know. We probably made things worse. Thankfully now she's in her 30s and we have a very good relationship with her, but it was a hard, hard road. Yeah. And we had to go pursuing, you know, getting professionally trained. So, what were now, because you're a family therapist, you're TBRI, you know, trained.
Well, I have a doctorate in psychology. I have a master's in marriage and family therapy, but actually I'm a parenting coach. So I don't diagnose mental illness or that sort of thing. But yeah, that journey started with our son's arrival, because I really did understand that I was ill-equipped and I wanted to figure out a way to help him. And that was my way of, you know, if I can get the right education, then I can fix him. That's a horrible thing to say. Looking back now, I don't know why I ever thought it was my job to fix him, to save him, to do any of that. Anytime that we decide that we need to do that for our kids, it's an unraveling life. So, but I did, I thought it was my job. Yeah. And so, but it didn't help. The degree didn't help. Now the TBRI training helped. It really did. The degree helped me advocate for him. I mean, I think I had a little bit more of a voice in advocacy for him, but the really turned kind of the coin on how we parented and kind of the atmosphere of the home was going to the Hope Connection camp with Karen Purvis.
Wow.
And, you know, the TBRI professional training did not help nearly as much as being a parent at the camp and being kind of immersed in TBRI language and just that practical, like, oh my gosh, he's doing this. Let's walk you through an appropriate response. Let's walk you through a connected response. And so that was life-changing for us. And I think at that point, we just decided we will keep all the therapeutic interventions that we can afford, but we have to stay connected to him, whether or not his behaviors are good. We have to delight and laugh every day, whether or not he's getting any better. And so we just kind of changed our focus and tried to really just enjoy the present moment and enjoy the sweet connection that we had with him. And that really started to change. At least our home life became so much better. Still outside of the home, he never found the right environment to give him those things.
Yeah, I love Dr. Karen Purvis, and that was her book, The Connected Child, I recommend to every adoptive and foster parent, kinship caregivers, even because that's the book that I found after our youngest came home from Ukraine. And we realized we are not equipped to parent this kiddo. Like, we're going to need help, right? So we dove into that. Like, I read the book, I ordered the videos. And back in the day when Dr. Purvis was still doing the Empower to Connect conferences herself, yeah. We flew from New York to Nashville to immerse ourselves in that weekend. Heard her speak in person, a few other times. Mm-hmm. Hosted the Empower to Connect conference, the simulcast when they started doing those, and just kept, going deeper in that as we could, and then became back in the day when Empowered to Connect was offering the train the trainer, we became parent trainers for that course. So we were doing those things too, and that definitely was the game changer for us. And then for us as time went on, because our youngest two are both diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome, so that added like then another whole layer mm-hmm. of things I had to go after to become educated, to learn, so I could help our kids. So I think parents, we do that, right? We pursue, and chase down everything that we can learn that will possibly help. And I always, believe that the TBRI stuff, the connected parenting stuff, definitely, vital for every parent on this journey, for sure. How old are your kids now?
So they are 19. They're both 19 now. But wow. They, one of them, our son, will be 20 soon. So,
okay. Yeah. And how are they doing now?
Well, our daughter's in a pre-med program. She just keeps blooming. And our son right now is in a pretty stable place, but that has not been the case of the past 5 years or so. So we mm-hmm. had some really, once we figured out, I would say after about the age of seven, we figured out how to parent him in a way that was really, really connected. And we had a lot of peace and joy in our home for years. And then adolescence was really hard. Mm-hmm. And so struggled with substance abuse. This is something he shares himself, so it's not a secret. And that really kind of pushed him off the edge for years. And so mm-hmm. right now he's sober, so he's able to he's doing a lot better in this season. We're really proud of him.
Yeah. So. Did he get any diagnoses along the way? Like, I know parents are always trying to get diagnoses, right? And sometimes we get them, sometimes they're not accurate, sometimes we don't get them, and it always seems to be a fight. But did you pursue anything like that?
Because of my education, I'm a little controlling about diagnoses. So I pursued the diagnoses that I thought was going to give him the most help with the least stigma. So do I think the early diagnoses were accurate? No. His diagnoses are heavier. I won't mention on here what, but it's pretty significant mental illness diagnoses, which we imagined early on. But early on, I didn't allow those diagnoses because I didn't want to, I didn't know how it would help him. So the first, he's very typical of a trauma kiddo's first diagnosis was ADHD, and then you kind of move on from there. And then we go into a mood disorder and depression and, all the stream of things so I don't know that. I think there are some diagnoses that are really helpful. It helped with the IEP for a season, but then it was just, he was a hard kiddo to understand. And I think when people don't understand something, they immediately turn in the easy thing to do is to blame somebody. So first people blamed us that we weren't parenting consistently enough or strictly enough or that sort of thing. And then as he got bigger and, got taller than me and just bigger, then they started just kind of blaming him. Mm-hmm. So that was hard. That was hard to experience. It was hard to watch, knowing how impaired he was, that people expected so much from him.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I find that even with our youngest is 18 and a half and, at prenatally exposed, he is impaired to the point where he does have a diagnosis of an intellectual disability, mm-hmm. which, you know, opens the door for some services and supports, because the FASD, FASD is not a diagnosis, but fetal alcohol syndrome is his diagnosis, and that gets you nowhere, really. Yeah. So, just seeing that the expectations are always on these kiddos, and it's, you know this, and our listeners hear this enough, I know from me too, is it's not that they, you know, it's not that they won't, it's that they can't, and they need understanding and they need the support, and that to be recognized, because if not, we're just compounding the problem.
And I do think, though, by the way, at 18, we did get an appropriate diagnosis so that our child could get the services he needed. So I do think there's some value in that, especially as they hit adulthood. There's some protection in an appropriate diagnosis. I just didn't think it was going to serve him well in elementary school.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. So rough road, clearly. Yeah. How did those challenges as you're raising your kids, especially with your son's diagnoses, you know, raising kids with trauma, you know, special needs, how was that affecting you personally, your home life, your marriage, all of that?
Yeah. So I think that for a while I was looking at parenting our son. I was running the race as though I was sprinting. Mm. And so I was running it intensely. I was throwing every resource I had and working and throwing all the resources I had, emotional, physical, financial. We were throwing it all into this sprint mm-hmm. that just turned into like a round the globe trek. And so I fizzled at one point. Mm-hmm. I really did fizzle, and I lost myself, and I gained a lot of weight, and I really, the things became really unbalanced, because I had put too much time, energy, effort into, I was treating our family as though he was the most important person in it. And I really had to ask myself at one point, what decisions would I make if each person in this family had equal importance? Mm. And so we started just shifting the way we did things. And it was a hard shift, because we were all used to catering to him. We were just all used to it, including his sister. We were all used to not waking the baby. You know, to trying to make sure the baby was happy and engaged and in the right activities and doing, you know. So I think part of my journey was understanding that parenting doesn't have an expiration date, and I get to invest in him for the rest of my life, and understanding that it's not my job to save or fix him, that it is my job to show up for him, to be in relationship with him. And by showing up, I mean, I'm talking all the places, you know, jail, psych hospital, all the places, that's my job. I have to show up for him, but really not expecting myself to fix things has been just this huge, huge release and permission to live life with joy.
Yeah, I love that, because I think sometimes we parent with, you know, trying to control outcomes, right? And that's not, you know, control is, it's an illusion, right? We don't really have control, but we're trying to hold on tightly and control outcomes, which proves to be disastrous.
Right. If all you're focusing on is the outcome, then you don't have any joy today. Right. If I'm just trying to get him through high school, if I'm just trying to get a high school diploma, what do those 4 years of high school look like? They're a nightmare. Like we have to just focus on one day at a time, one moment at a time. And you know, we were able to do that, but we had to really hit rock bottom to get to a place where we were like, we've got to be able to live in the moment, because because everything that we were afraid of would happen happened. Mm. And, you know, you work so hard to avoid those things as a parent. You work so yeah. hard to avoid those things. I saw it when he was 2 and it happened when he was 18, 15, mm. 16, whatever. And that was really, that's hard.
Yeah.
That's hard. Yes. Not to have been able to prevent it is hard, but I never could have prevented it. We really did do all the things. The fact that he's in a good space now, I don't think has anything to do with us. I think it's totally a God thing.
Mm, yeah, I love that. But personally, how did you find the hope and healing for yourself that you needed and for your family?
Yeah. Well, I started focusing on all the areas of our life that we had neglected. So instead of just paying for literally the best therapist for him, I mean, we used to go all around the country finding the best people for him in all the fields that he needed. And I spent my entire salary doing that. So we lived in a very small house on just my husband's income, and pretty much any resource that was out there, I would invest in for him. But then if our daughter asked for a private trainer for cross country, I didn't think that was a worthy investment. Mm-hmm. Even though it was literally 2% of what we spent on him. Right. Mm-hmm. So I started really looking at those things and saying, why not spend money on a therapist for myself? Like, or marriage therapy, or why not do some of the things for my daughter that she wants to do? And so we just started first just behaving as though each person in the family was equally important, which was really hard. It was really hard, mm-hmm. but we just made that behavioral shift. And with it came all these wins. With it came this feeling that, gosh, he can be struggling for the rest of his life, and I can still invest in my friendships. We can still enjoy our relationship with our daughter that's so typical. We can still enjoy a successful marriage where not everything we talk about is him. We can still, save money or spend money on ourselves. Because sometimes some of our kids who have lots of issues, it's like it's like you're pouring water through a colander. Mm-hmm. You know, it's... you get them a phone, they lose their phone. You get them a phone, their phone gets stolen. You get them a phone, they break their phone. And it's just like this constant. And that's for kind of every little area of their life. You get them an apartment, they get kicked out. You get them, you know, it's so we had to just be like, how can we balance this a little bit better? And again, still keep showing up for him, but not be in the role as saviors. Be more in the role of, we love you, we want to help you, but we can't save you.
Wow. And what was his response to that?
At first it was anger. At first it was anger, but then he was able to adjust to it too. Like, I would say he definitely understands. We worked with a therapist. She was fantastic. And we literally just worked on regaining balance in our home so that he didn't have as much power and control over our choices and decisions. And so, you know, we worked with her for a couple of years. And so we worked really hard on I think that it is normal to develop codependency on your most dependent child, like an unhealthy codependency. So that's what him and I had going on for a while there, because our survival as a family depended on me being able to read what he needed and get to it fast. Our daughter's peace depended on that. Our, you know, the peace in our home depended on that. And so I kind of developed this tendency to overemphasize him and not pay attention to the other things that one, I was more successful at. Two, you know, they were really important to just my sense of self. I think if we weren't just created to parent our kids. We have other purposes in our life. And so I started investing back into my work again, mm-hmm. and realized that even though it felt like my strategies were not completely effective at home, I had thousands of strategies that were so effective for other people because I had a kiddo who was just so complex. And so, and I found that nothing overwhelmed me because I had a kiddo who was so complex. And so I started seeing kind of the connected pieces of, you know, I've brought you into this so that you can join other people in this as well. Like I would still choose not, I would still choose for my child not to suffer this way. I still don't see the reason in that. And I know that I will one day. I just, if I could have avoided his suffering in any way, I would have, because anytime that you have a family who's struggling as much as we were, you have a child who's struggling so much more. And, you know, and that grieves me because I still, you know, he can't get too big for my heart to melt every time I see him. He just can't. He's, you know, I can't. Motherhood is ridiculous sometimes. It's ridiculous how much I adore this kid, despite everything.
Yeah. Oh, I hear you. Love that. Yeah. So you mentioned investing back into your work. So you established Real Child Consulting, and I'm assuming that that really happened after raising your son. And
after the Hope Connection Camp, but I got more and more involved. You know, I started sort of building it. So I coach people who have kiddos like him, also organizations who are kind of working with kiddos like him. And I do workshops and things like that. And we have a Facebook group that's fantastic. It's been such a bomb to me as well. And we do monthly trainings and we do twice a month Zoom calls that are just for parents because I want to restore some balance in the home. We don't talk about our kids. We might talk about the effect that our children have on us, but I really want that time to be focused on what do you need? How can you restore some balance and joy in your life? And how are we going to run this race if it's not a sprint? And I feel like we have to keep being reminded of that as parents, like slow down, pace yourself. This might be forever. I know it is for us and probably for you as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I know those groups are so important. We established a support group for parents of kiddos prenatally exposed to alcohol, whether they were diagnosed or not, because it's so hard to get a diagnosis. Right. And just being able to, you know, be together. And we do three Zoom calls a month. And just to know that we're not the only ones experiencing these things and have a community and not feel so isolated and be able to encourage each other throughout the week. And we have a private Facebook group, and we do a Saturday devotional. Like, I'll do a little video, another mom leads it with me, so we take turns. So just like a little video devotional each Saturday morning to bring encouragement to the, it's primarily moms who attend, but we have some dads in there as well. But you know, because we do need to take care of ourselves, and we're. Mm-hmm. So I love the work that you are doing, and I know, share with us your website, because I know you're on social media and you have a website. Tell us about how we can find you.
So on Instagram, I'm on @RealChildConsulting, and Facebook, it's Real Child Consulting LLC, and then my website is www.realchild.net.
Nice. And we'll make sure that we put links to all of those in the show notes for this episode so folks can find you, because you're doing amazing work. And I know you do the coaching, consulting, and you also work with teens as well. Tell us a little bit about exactly what your programs are.
So I work with parents in figuring out like parenting strategies. I coach some kids. A lot of the parents that I work with also want me to do story coaching with kids. So we kind of go through their timeline and help them understand why they struggle so much with trusting adults. And so it's very powerful. It can really create a huge shift in a child to just understand, and in a parent, actually. The timeline work is as much for parents as children. So I do that with the younger kids, and then teenagers who are just struggling with the identity piece, with different things like that, I will coach them as well. So I do a lot of different things like that.
I love that. And people can be from anywhere in the country, right? Because it's online thing.
Yeah. Awesome. And I actually, even people overseas, I have seen them as well at different times. So yeah. If we can figure out the time difference, we usually
that's
can.
Always a thing. Yeah.
I know. I mean, I might see you at 6 a.m., but yeah.
Yeah. It's important though, to be able to connect. And like, again, we will put the links in the show notes for, so our listeners can find you like that, easily. And my son just walked through the door, so I was a little distracted. The dog was barking. He came in, all of the things are going on at the same time. But you traveled this road as a parent, and a professional. So what have you discovered are really the biggest needs that parents, adoptive foster parents, have on this parenting journey?
So one, I think, is understanding the difference between impairment and intent. And I think that's the first challenge that adoptive parents have, is what is intentional and what is an impairment. And a lot of times with attachment disordered kids, you have some of both, but you deal with those two things really differently. If it's an impairment, we teach. If it's intentional, then we deal with that very differently. We kind of reestablish the hierarchy in the home for the intentional stuff. But with the impairment stuff, we have to really just stay curious. I think most things, and I found this even with my child who was so complex, most issues really were preventable for a really long time. Again, I just had to really stay on top of being curious and understanding why he was responding to different things in different ways. So that's why we were so successful in the home for so long, which was a surprise to most people who understood his level of impairment, because didn't succeed anywhere else. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just to be able to, you know, what is my responsibility as a parent? It's not to control my child, but it is to set an environment to the best of my ability that my child can be successful in, that my child feels connected in, that my child feels delighted in. And so those are the things that just kind of shifting the responsibility from, I have to control my kid. I have to punish my kid enough so that they understand. Actually, interesting, today I just was speaking to someone who felt like it wasn't an effective punishment if the child didn't react in a big negative way. So just kind of changing some of those paradigms, you know, punishment has to hurt. Discipline, it doesn't have to hurt. It can just be gentle correction. It can be gentle teaching and that sort of thing. And just learning what triggered me and how I wouldn't have considered myself a controlling person, but oh, I was. I thought it was my job to be in charge and I was going to die on every hill. Mm-hmm. And that was ridiculous. It was ridiculous, but that is, I just thought that was my job as a parent. Like, I have to die on this hill. Now I've said no, now I have to make sure it happens. And so just learning like what is worth engaging in and what can we ignore? Because if we're punishing or even just critiquing our child for everything that they're doing, they're never going to feel successful. Like, so much has to be ignored while we work on one or two things at a time. That's it.
That's it.
And then also just curiosity and anger can't live in the same space at the same time. And I just ask parents, just shift into curiosity. Like, what is going on? It can be about yourself. It can be about your kid, but shift into that state of, why is this happening? What could this be about? Why does this trigger me so much? When are other times my child responds this way? We just kind of go to that place of, let's discover kind of problem solving instead of just jumping to discipline. Can we just figure out what's going on and have a better strategy?
I love all of that. The curiosity piece, I've learned that with just exploring, understanding how my son's brain works or mm-hmm. works differently because of the prenatal exposure and the trauma, of course. And then a big thing is consequences, right? Because neurotypical people or kids, you know, we give them consequences, they learn from them, and then we go on our merry way. Our kiddos don't necessarily learn from consequences.
Right.
And that's a challenge, especially if they're in school, right? And school loves to issue consequences.
They do.
What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's true. I mean, our kids, they especially don't learn from imposed consequences. And it takes right. them sometimes hundreds to thousands of times of natural consequences to learn. So yes, you're right. It's really hard for them to learn just through consequences. But I think if our expectations change, and I think the schools, you know, IEPs can have very specific instructions in them. My personal experience though, is that if the teacher doesn't make her own paradigm shift, if it's not done in the right spirit, our children pick up on that and it's not successful mm-hmm. anyways. So our kids are very sensitive. What they lack in reasoning abilities, they make up for in attunement. Now, they're not always right in how they perceive that attunement, but they're right that something is off. They're right that somebody doesn't like them. They're right that, and so, you know, they're just highly sensitive to that. And that's where we can advocate for our kids' environment, for getting them at a different school or a different teacher. And I know it's hard. I mean, I never expected, I think my child was in like, I can't even count how many schools. I never expected to be moving our kids so much. You know, I didn't expect that would be part of our journey, but, and I thought teachers would like me, but they didn't because my kid was very hard and I tried to advocate for him and I discovered people don't love advocates and people don't love. Yeah. They just don't. They don't like people who speak up for people who can't speak up for themselves because then that makes their job a little more complicated. So that was hard. I was definitely not winning any mom awards.
Yeah. With the school, especially. And I find that, you know, we have to be those fierce advocates for our kids. And we have to be the expert in whatever diagnoses they have.
Exactly.
Because I learned early on, just because one may be a special education teacher doesn't mean that they specialize in what my kid has.
Right.
Or, you know, and or, you know, whether it be the teacher or the social worker at school or the principal or the guidance counselor, whoever all are working with our kids, right? And that I found is can be frustrating, just navigating that. Mm-hmm. With credibility, right? That
right.
I do know
right.
what I'm talking about as a parent. And then you had, you know, as a doctor, you've got these degrees. Did that help you at all? Or were you still kind of looked at as crazy mom?
I was looked at extra crazy mom, I think, but it does help me in advocating for others. And it helps me now as his guardian, as his medical guardian. It definitely helps me now. But I think when he was little, again, people are just always, in some ways, our child was so bright and charming and beautiful and charismatic. And he had all these. And so it was very hard for them to understand that, you know, they used words like spoiled and he doesn't have consequences and things like that. They didn't understand our parenting strategy at all. And it didn't help that he would say things like, my mom believes in TBRI. She's not going to punish me. It didn't help. It didn't help that he
it didn't help that. Yeah.
In their face. No.
No. Wow. I love it. Gosh. Wow. So yeah. And I find that, you know, they don't, you know, I find that especially if like in with my kiddos, because they really don't understand the FASD piece, you know, it's trying to sort of educate them about this at the same time as getting that support for my kid. And it can be very frustrating. And
then you're starting over every year. Even if somebody finally figures out how to manage your child, you're starting over. And that's so hard. And it gets especially hard in middle school when they've got like six teachers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it just gets more complicated from there. So I thought elementary school was hard, but I had no idea how hard it could be.
Yeah. We're fortunate. Our school district has a program where they call it 12-1-1. So it's 12 students maximum, one special education teacher, one TA, and they're in that room for everything other than PE, and they get to go out for certain things, but they're all working at their own level academically. They may be all studying the solar system, for example, but they're all doing that at their own level. So I find that can work very well, in our situation. It reminded me of, like, I used to homeschool a whole bunch of my kids. So it's like, that's how we homeschooled. Right. But still them not understanding exactly how his brain works, or, why consequences aren't, he's not going to learn from that. Like, let's figure out something that will help. But if you're just going to give him a consequence and think he's going to get it, you're wrong. So just kind of always fighting that, right? Always, I always say, be wise as a serpent, gentle as a dove, right? So I'm educating them, but also being, gentle and respectful. And it's served me well so far, but I know every parent listening can probably tell a story in every school district, in every state, every building different, right? Yes. And it always seems like the general consensus is we're fighting for our kids and we're advocating, and it's draining and exhausting. And gosh, we can be tired parents. So yeah. Melody, how do parents find help and support for themselves when the journey gets really, really tough? Like, you've experienced a really tough journey. What would you say to parents who are like, I'm not sure if we're going to make it. This is so hard. We never expected how hard this is going to be. What would you say to them?
So I think that, again, you have to invest in yourself, especially in those seasons. Yeah. And I think two words that come to my mind are rest and refreshment. Those feel different to me. Mm-hmm. Refreshment would be more along the lines of, and this actually, a parent that I was working with brought this up, and I loved the concept, more along the lines of just doing something different and fun, kind of getting out of your same old, because it does feel like Groundhog Day. I know you feel that sometimes. Yeah. I feel that way sometimes, like, oh my gosh, do we have to have the same conversation over and over and over again, forever, for the rest of our lives? And so doing something novel, fun, different, out of your routine, it just really makes you feel alive again. And so just think back to when you were a teenager, what would that look like? Was it going kayaking? Was it trying a new food? Was it exploring a new part of town? Was it going on a new hiking trail? And so things like that, I really encourage people, do it, just do it. And then the rest piece, it doesn't have to cost money. We used to take turns spending the night at my mom's house. Now my mom lives with us. We're, 20 years into this. She lives with us, but we used to take turns spending the night with her, and we would usually take our daughter. And so not only did we get a sweet weekend with my mom, but we got special time with our daughter. Mm-hmm. And so, like, and that didn't cost us any money. We didn't have any money at that point because we were spending so much on therapies and such. But that rest was so essential for our sanity. Mm-hmm. And what people don't understand is they feel like it's a character flaw when their self-control is exhausted. And self-control is an exhaustible resource. Like, research shows us this. That is one way that my curious mind helps me understand myself too. Like, why am I getting agitated? Like, I totally understand what's going on. And it's because you need rest. It's because you need rest. And if you come back from a 2-hour rest and you want to snap at the first thing somebody says to you, it's not long enough. Mm-hmm. If you come back from a 5-day rest, and I am saying this because I actually just said this to a couple of parents, and you just want to snap at everybody around you, it's still not long enough. So how are we going to get enough rest so that your battery is charged again, so that you can kind of rejoin the troops, per se? And it's not a character flaw to be depleted. It is not. I get depleted. My son got, while I was doing my work, anyway, my son got hit by a car. The things that happened.
Oh my. As a
child. Yes. And it was 3 days before the workshop where I met you. And anyway, so I had to go pick him up. He lives a few hours away, bring him home, get all set up and all that stuff. And then, you know, did the workshop, came back. He was with us a couple of weeks or something. I was pretty depleted at the end of that. And emotionally and physically and in all the ways. But I understand that at this point in our journey, and I'm able to just take the time to rest and mm-hmm. understand that this is exhausting in a way most people don't understand. Cause it's not just the physical care, it's the regulating a dysregulated child. It's the helping him through anxiety provoking medical procedures. It's the, you know, it's all of that for 24/7 for 12, 14 days. I can't believe I used to do that all the time. Also, there's hope, guys, because there is, I mean, I didn't see myself getting this much rest or refreshment when our child was 13. I didn't see any way of ever having this, but you know, people do grow and change, and there's so much hope for our kids, regardless of their impairments, as those frontal lobes keep developing for a very long time. They develop for a very long time. So we can't give up on our kids.
Yeah, there's hope. There's light at the end of the tunnel. There is hope. And what you're saying also made me think of, because I never really, through our journey, didn't really recognize how exhausted I was and how just going through the day, although I felt like I was navigating the day, you know, okay, it was still exhausting. It's still draining to be on 24/7. And I remember, because being a little older and doing the menopause thing, I remember going to get some testing done with a naturopath doctor, and she just said, I suspect that your hormone levels are too low and your cortisol levels are too high. And so I'm like, really? So I did, you know, we did the testing for that, and then she was spot on. My mm-hmm. hormone levels were bottomed out, and my cortisol levels were like off the charts. And I'm like, wow. So I have some supplements that do help with that. Good. In addition to the fact that I recognize I do need rest, and it's okay. It's right. okay. It's part of this journey. We need to take care of ourselves, because then we won't be there for the long haul for our kiddos.
Exactly. I felt what the Lord say to me when my son was 13, you are his greatest resource. Mm-hmm. Start taking care of yourself.
Yes.
And it just hit me really hard, because I thought, that's so true. Like, our problems are not going away.
Right.
The only thing that's changing is I'm getting more and more exhausted and more worn down and more depleted. And that's not good for him.
Right.
Either.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I hear you. Such wisdom, Melody. Well, you chose our opening verse, Psalm 25, verse 1. In you, Lord, my God, I put my trust. What does that verse mean to you?
Well, and that verse, and the part of that verse that I really like is the part of those who hope in the Lord will not be brought to shame. So there's different parts of that verse, but that part,
Psalm is great.
Yes, the whole psalm is great. The reason I really love that part is because for a lot of years I struggled with shame. And just shame that this was the one task in my life. I'm an achiever, and I wasn't achieving anything except more distress in this journey. I wasn't achieving anything, and I wasn't helping my son achieve anything. And so there was just a lot of shame in that early on in my journey. And I think I just found my confidence in the Lord, where again, I shifted my perspective to, it's not my job to save him anyways. That's Jesus's job. And it's not my job to fix him. I'm not omnipotent, but I can show up with hope in the Lord and hold my head high, no matter what distressing situation I have to walk into with him. And there have been so many beyond belief distressing situations that I'm thankful that I have a better balance of being able to release things, because at first I was just too focused on control And I hope now, I feel like I do have a better balance of, okay, I can control this, but I'm releasing this. And I release a lot of things and I say it out loud. I encourage you guys to say it out loud. I do. I say it out loud all the time. And I say it to the Lord. I release him to you. I release him to you, Jesus. I release him to you today. But before I go to bed at night, if I'm stressed about something, God, I'm releasing him to you tonight. You're the only one who can watch over him tonight. And there's something about just saying that over and over again, that just helps me feel just the confidence of it's not my job. My job is to connect with him and love him, but it's not my job to fix him and to show up, even if I'm uncomfortable. That's good leadership, right? Good leaders show up in the mess and try to help their people make sense of the mess and try to help their people out of the mess. So we really believe in showing up. I won't tell you all the messes we show up in because that's, but we believe in showing up for our kids. So, and doing it with hope, not in us or our children, but in the Lord and in what, in what he created our kids for, that we really hope we will get to see that lived out one day.
I love that. I love that. Just so much of what you just said, releasing them to the Lord, not fixing them, but showing up. Mm-hmm. Time and time again, building that connection still, right?
Yeah.
So important. So as we wrap up, Melody, and I feel like I could just chat with you all day long, but I know we both have other things to do today too. But knowing that most of our listeners are adoptive and foster parents, especially moms, would you leave us with some words of encouragement for our listeners?
Yeah. So I think that if your focus can't shift from control to release, what ends up happening is when you realize that you cannot fix your child, the tendency is to be done with them. Mm-hmm. And here's the danger, because I see it over and over, and now I'm parenting a young adult. So I see this a lot now. You don't get to be done with your kid ever. And so we have to shift that focus. It's not our job to control them, and we have to release, but we also have to keep being in their lives, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's not fun, and even if we get nothing out of it. So another thing is just for us to adjust our expectations so that we have very few expectations of our really impaired kids, but we expect ourselves to behave in a way that we are proud of ourselves at the end of the day.
Wow.
And if that's not happening, it's probably because you're still trying to fix your kid. There's a lot of pressure there. There's a lot of pressure there that I want you to let go of and focus on what can I do to be a good leader, because you can be a fantastic leader and have a kid who's always climbing back in the same creek. You can.
Yeah, absolutely. Because we can't control outcomes, right?
You can put up a fence, you can put up a barrier, you can put up, and sometimes your kid will still get in the creek. And that's not your fault if you're, you know, being a responsible parent, which I think most of us are.
Yeah. Such wisdom again, Melody. I just love that. We're going to keep showing up. And we don't get to be done with our kids.
We don't ever get to be done. They've been abandoned enough.
Yeah. I hear you. Such words of wisdom again, Melody. Thank you so much for sharing your story, for encouraging us today, for all that you're doing for families, for parents and children in crisis. Thanks so much for being with us.
You're welcome, friend. I'll talk to you soon.
Wow, and thank you for listening to the Adoption and Foster Care Journey podcast today. I hope you were encouraged by my conversation with Melody. Links to her social media and her website will be in the show notes, so you can scroll down and find those there. I know I was encouraged, and just she was a wealth of information, so I hope that you will check her out. And we're here to encourage you and equip you for your parenting journey. And again, if you suspect that your kids may have been prenatally exposed to alcohol or other drugs, This is a podcast that also can be a huge resource for you, not only the podcast, but other resources that I offer with parent coaching and workshops and training and our support group. You know, I get it. And all of our kids have come in with some level of loss and trauma, right? Lots of different things could be going on, like you heard in Melody's story. But I know for my kiddos, having a diagnosis of fetal alcohol syndrome, that was the big thing that has really consumed us, right? Because it changes everything. It affects everything. And our two boys are 18 and 20 now. And I've gone on to get that training, extra training. Maybe you're pursuing things like that to, you know, we have to become the expert, right? Sometimes in whatever it is that's going on with our kids so that we can better support them and advocate for them. And I went on to become a facilitator of the FACETS neurobehavioral model. So I know how hard this journey can be. I'm still on the journey with you, and this podcast and all of the resources that we have, things I wish I had years ago, because when we started out, we had nothing and had to really learn as we navigated this journey. So make sure you check out our website, justicefororphansny.org, to look for the resources that we have. And you can click on the tab for the FASD resources on our website. Again, all the links, even for our website and my personal website where I blog, sandraflack.com, all of that in the show notes. Be sure to find and follow us on social media. Justice for Orphans is on both Facebook, Instagram, and actually on LinkedIn as well. And I am there on all three of those places at Sandra Flack. You can find me there. And I'm grateful that you were here. Thank you for joining us today. I am grateful that you spent your valuable time with me. Grateful to have you along for the journey. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Adoption and Foster Care Journey podcast, brought to you by Justice for Orphans. We hope you were encouraged today. Please be sure to subscribe to this podcast and leave a review and share it with your fellow foster and adoptive parent friends so they can be encouraged too. Be sure to find and follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Justice for Orphans. And check out our website for vital resources at justicefororphansny.org.